More of Lake Effect Now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers. Imagine it's pitch dark out and you're driving down a road in the middle of nowhere. Then you see an abandoned structure and you decide to go exploring. That's exactly what Chris and Katie Robleski do with their night photography. They call themselves the Flash Knights, and for half of the year, they're out investigating abandoned structures in the dark and illuminating history. With just a full moon, a flashlight, and long exposure photography, they turn lost Americana into unique art, usually while trespassing. The Milwaukee natives joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio while they were on their winter break. Chris Robleski starts by explaining how he became interested in night photography.
15 years ago, I was just kind of wanting a challenge and needed to get out. I had lost my parents, and I thought, what better way to go out at night with a flashlight in a freezing cold? It was January 1st, 15 years ago, actually. This is my 15-year anniversary of doing it, and I liked the challenge of it. And fast forward 5 years, I met Katie via the internet.
The magic of dating sites.
Yeah. The magic of dating sites. And
I had seen his work. Obviously, he introduced me to, this is back when Flickr was a thing, and he sent me his Flickr site. I was like, oh man, this is so cool. He's like, yeah, let's, I'll show you how to do it. And we got into this train yard. He gave me this Vivitar flash and a little purple gel over the top. And he's like, head on into the train, and then just keep pressing this button. And so I did, and I came out of the train, looked at his little LCD screen on his camera, and I was just, like, hooked. It was so cool.
And I suppose that says a lot about both of your personalities. That's like, hey, you want to go to an abandoned so-and-so, and just take this, flash this for a while, I'll tell you when to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned you just use a simple flashlight. Is that the extent of the tools that you use for these night shoots?
Yeah, we go out during full moons, so we need an external, other than just our flashlight. Otherwise, it would just be really dark imagery. There's a lot of timing and science stuff that we kind of mow through and just kind of like create the art on the other side of the camera. But yeah, we started out with simple flashes and then flashlights. And then a guy in San Francisco created this flashlight that has multiple colors, every color under the rainbow, in fact, called Proto Machine. And we use that now because we used to put these little colored gels like you'd see in a theater. Bands have them over their lights so you can see their colored stage show. But we'd always lose them, and they'd fall off somewhere, or they'd get all crumply and create these weird colors. So we morphed into this flashlight, and now we just basically have a camera, flashlight, and then hopefully a full moon. But that doesn't always happen.
Yeah. Chris mentioned adversity, and there's a lot that has to do with the weather, for example. Usually we go out during clear skies so you can get star trails because of the long exposure. You can kind of see the way the Earth's moving and the star trails in the sky. This one time we drove, it's 4 hours from here down in Illinois, and clouds were starting to roll in, but we had already paid $5 in tolls. So we're like, ugh. And we were just like, let's just check out the house because we'd never seen it before. And most of the time when we roll up on these places, we don't see them in the daylight. They're just, it's pitch black when we get there. And we got there, and just with some experimentation, like Chris said, with the flashlight that we have, because it's so powerful, we got like one of our best shots. And it was like pure cloud cover, no moon. Just by using the flashlight, it turned out pretty cool.
And so, you only need one in these buildings, or do you just kind of play it by ear and set up multiple?
It's just one. So it's basically me going inside. Like, Chris is the camera guy. He's like the composition man. And then I'm the light painter. And I go inside and I go from room to room to room, just lighting up each of the rooms. So it's a quick, like, depending on how much ambient light we have, it can be like a minute to 5 minutes. But sometimes a minute to do a two-story house, I'm just booking it through, like, up these stairs that have no banister. There's like holes in the ground, like holes in the floor. And it's pitch black again because I can only use the flashlight so many times, so I don't show up.
Okay.
So it's like a whole ordeal.
So you're doing it room to room as quickly as you can to get that full image captured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of these buildings do not look very structurally sound.
No.
So do you scope out before you go in and paint the light? Do you like say like, okay, here's kind of like my running route, so to speak?
If we're lucky, I can do that. And sometimes we have to.
If you're not trespassing.
Yeah, sometimes we're dealing with like neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the middle of nowhere, you can hear just like
Everything.
Like every single step. And we've run into that before where neighbors are like, they come in their truck, their pickup truck with their dog on one side and probably a, you know, a rifle on the other.
Right. I can't imagine it's a welcome sight to see, like, what are all these strange lights going on, like, down on my property.
Like the aliens have landed.
we often wonder, like, I wonder if we were driving by, what we would do. Would we stop if I saw a green or purple light coming out of a house? Or what I would just chalk that up to say, like, you know what, let's just move on and carry on with our day. But yeah, we usually walk together through with a bright white light before we set up. But even that doesn't show all the... we always go in with the less is more. Like, if you see a hole in the floor, you're probably going to be like, all right, there's the hole. Don't worry about the boards that are cracking to the hole. And just kind of walk through there. And there is some adversity. That's what we kind of like, the challenge.
Yeah.
And it's preserving history, too. So...
Well, a little adrenaline with some history.
Oh, yeah, definitely, like. Because any crick or crack, sometimes, like Katie was saying, the neighborhood dogs, those are the rural alarm clocks, if you will. And in the inner city stuff that we do, we don't really have to worry as much. But, you know, because people are like, oh, you're in East St. Louis. It's such a terrible place. Or Detroit, it's such a terrible place. Or Gary. And I'm like, nah, it's dark. We're inside of a building. They probably might even be frightened of us.
Like,
and I mean, I say they, I mean just the neighbors or whoever's walking by. They got their own world to worry about. So we've only had one instance where someone was kind of frightening, but that was with...
Most times they come around when you explain, like, hey, this is what we're doing, or, you know.
We were in South Dakota at a ghost town with... Well, I shouldn't say a ghost town. There's one guy living there, and it was a huge development for...
It was like a ranch.
Yeah, a rancher. He's a rancher, and he heard us in the ghost town part where there's just like hundreds of cars and buildings and banks and stuff. So we were just like wandering around, and all of a sudden I saw this pickup truck and a dog, and I was like, okay. I go, Katie, why don't you go talk to him?
Like,
she's prettier.
Like an innocent lady.
Yeah, I was like,
threatening image.
Yeah.
But he was like, okay, whatever, just have fun, I guess.
Sure.
He was probably thinking, like, just why are they taking pictures in the dark?
Yeah.
And then... I don't know. We just had it, that ended up being fun when you have kind of a permission situation. But most times there's nobody anywhere near us.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm more worried about like wolves and coyotes and pheasants. Pheasants, I found out, are pretty vicious.
Oh,
they can like peck your shins apart while you're standing there. So and the cold weather. We've gotten really far down there in the temperatures. We've done we did some shoots outside of Stevens Point. An old church and
Gleason,
Wisconsin, which is way north, and we did it on New Year's Eve.
And it was zero.
It was negative.
Yeah.
And we left with chilblains, which are nasty, just as bad as frostbite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So with these places, you know, you're going to the Dakotas, here in Wisconsin, elsewhere. How do you find or scope out these locations? Because I imagine they're not exactly on a map. They're not like your fiberglass oddities that are kind of roadside attractions or things like that. So how do you find them? What attracts you to them?
I do a lot of Google satellite earthing. Some people will not tell me them. So I do get a lot of intel from other people. They're like, all right, I know this place. And then sometimes I... see a picture and I'm like, oh, this would be really cool at night because it's like an old gas station in the middle of a New Mexico desert. And I mean, when I was looking for it, all I saw was a silhouette and I was hoping that it was the building. So I parked off the road. There was a cattle gate and I hiked about a mile in and I was like, this is it, you know, but I had no intel other than just
like zooming in from
In from Google Earth.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if the roof is missing, obviously no one's there because, you know, what would they be? Because there was a house right next to it. But I was confused where the road was. So it was kind of like the intrigue of doing it. But I did it at 3 a.m. with a guy from Texas. And I was getting pretty tired and he was getting pretty tired. And then he was losing interest in doing it. But it was kind of like the white whale because there's no road to it or anything. So I use Google Earth a lot. People give us tips and pointers, and sometimes we just happenstance upon them.
Yeah.
Dakotas,
for sure.
North and South Dakota.
Driving around.
Wyoming.
Yeah.
Well, and how great that your profession gives you that flexibility to stumble upon your next shoot.
Yeah.
Or...
yeah.
For sure. Our GPS is just chock full of all the places we see, like, during the day, and we're like, oh, yeah, for next time. as long as you don't get your GPS stolen out of your car.
Which did happen just down the road from there.
Yeah. Oh.
But yeah, and then we like kind of the other part of the is that we have a lot of time to kill in the day, and we try to visit in town, however small it is, because we have no fears there either. If we're going in buildings in the dark, we have no fear. So we try to find some like small town people to talk to, and then, you know, drink, have a beer or some food or whatever. Being vegetarians in the middle of the prairies gets to be a challenge.
Yep. So,
but the people are really nice. Everywhere we go, they're always like, kind of like, what do you do? And
I'm sometimes
like, they're like, this is a living. And I'm like, yeah.
And sometimes
it is.
They remember us. We went to North Dakota again, like the next year, and we stayed in the same little motel, little mom and pop motel. And we told her, oh, we're taking these photos at night. And she's like, I remember you from last year. And we're just like, what? That's crazy. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, like, taking photos at night.
How many people are, like, talk about flashlights and photos?
Right.
So, it's kind of nice. So, we've built, like, a rapport with some of these people because we want to be on the good side of
it's technically can be trespassing sometimes.
Yeah. So we try to, like, get as much permission, but most of the people or places we go, as mentioned, other than some of the inner city stuff, I've done some pretty scary things in Detroit. Not the people, it's the buildings are scary because they're like dark hallways of
just crumbling.
And like, I probably shouldn't be in here, but there was a hotel in Gary, Indiana, which they took down, and I went to the top and went on the roof, and I know I'm older, so I was like, I probably shouldn't be doing this. But I met her, and then that made me not do as many crazy.
Okay, you go do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, now I don't do as many crazy things.
Sure. That's kind of how it came about, because he didn't have health insurance when we met. He was just, kind of like a freelance guy. And I was working at, like, Kohl's or something. And so I was like, you can't go in there anymore. I'm going to do it. I've got the health insurance in case somebody breaks their leg or whatever.
Perfectly logical. When you mentioned that, these things they don't look good. Upon first glance and inspection, but then adding the dynamic of the different colored lights and the night exposure, makes them into beautiful photographs and art pieces.
Thank you.
And with some of the photos that our listeners can see online, I particularly am drawn to the Painted Desert Trading Post, Old Route 66, Arizona, because that you can kind of see, like, here's a smaller building, and then you can see the bones furthermore on the inside. You see the plaster coming off the walls. You see the old ads on the outside.
Yeah.
Just those hidden gems. So when it comes to that one or any of the others that are on our website, what kind of memories do you associate with them?
Painted Desert is
crucial.
That is, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah. Route 66 was near and dear to us. We've traveled it many times, but that in particular it's not a drivable section. So we had to park our car at a gate, another cattle gate, and then hike the fence and walk 3 miles into the Painted Desert. On the old stretch of Route 66. So for that one, that's extremely memorable. That's one of our most memorable, like, long exposure, things that we've done because, when you're walking out and you hear nothing, being in the city, we're right in the city of Milwaukee. So when we get to get out and there's, like, nothing but a blanket of stars above you, there's no sounds. You can barely...
Except for those snoring cows.
Yeah, we heard snoring cows.
We weren't sure what it was. They were like, it's just the cows. It's okay.
Yeah, there's like a tiny viaduct with, like, I don't know, 20 cows just snoring away. And I thought, I wonder if they're going to wake up. Because cows aren't pretty cool at night, but cattle, like the bulls, are not. So those are kind of frightening to be... I've been warned about that from ranchers and such. They're like, don't go walking out with the bulls because they get crazy and territorial. But that was like a very memorable, just because it was such a long hike. I left wearing shorts because it was 70, shorts and a t-shirt, and not knowing that the high desert drops almost 40 to 50 degrees. We were running back to the car because I was like, oh my God, I have shorts and a t-shirt on. It's like 35 degrees.
Running to stay warm.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, I'm so cold. And I'm like, but we're in the desert. And then you wake up the next day, it's 100. You're like, this is a really weird thing.
Yeah. With going out and having such a drastic different experience finding these photographs versus when you're coming back, editing, traveling to art shows, interacting with people, do you find that it's the perfect balance, because to be so immersed in your work in two different ways, that your time in the desert together, in nature, alone, nothing but cows and stars around you, that it feeds you in a good
way. It does. It's the perfect you know, 6 month to 6 month kind of repetitious cycle that we do. The summer can be brutal. The shows, kind of like Chris said, with the 100 degrees, we did a show in Des Moines last summer, and it was above 100. It was like a heat index of 112 or something. And you're sweating it out on the concrete and talking to thousands of people, and you're just like, and we're not particularly extroverted, so there's that too. So you're just kind of wiped by the end of the season. But then we transition into the shooting all winter, and it is quite the nice balance.
Yeah. Why do you think people should appreciate this? I imagine people come in around at the stands at the art fair. They're not seeing photography like this. And what
that
are some people's
sure.
misconceptions or, you know?
That it's Photoshop. Every single time. And we have a giant sign. The signs have gotten progressively bigger and more there's a multitude of them that says no Photoshop, because everybody comes in and they say, oh, I thought this was all on the computer.
So that's one of the things, that being in the public eye as opposed to like a gallery or a museum, we have nowhere to hide. So we're in a 10 by 10 tent. Mm-hmm. It's usually hot. People, for the most part, have been blown away because they're like, wow, you don't use Photoshop. Because our editing, we don't do anything unless there's like a dramatic swear word that we're like, you know, I really like the composition.
Let's take the graffiti out.
Let's take the graffiti out. Yeah. So that's about the extent of our editing. But everything is pretty much natural. I was inspired by photographers, O. Winston Link. He just put a piece of film in there, and then that was the end of it for his photograph. No, like, darkroom craziness or whatever. So, we love to see the effect of, we had a gentleman buy a picture for his very young son, and he like treasures it. He's like, we had this picture where we drew a door with light in the dark, and he was like so blown away by it. And so the reaction that we get is usually very, it's humbling to me, because I never had any intention of showing people this work other than just putting it on the internet. And I definitely never thought about having it be a career.
And shows and stuff.
Yeah, and then people just, it's usually like, they're either blown away. Occasionally we'll get the scoff where they're like, ugh, and they think it's Photoshop, and then they walk away, but I can't catch up to them to tell them, no, we're just using light and moonlight and light. So that's mm-hmm. basically all of our work is just flashlight, moonlight, and a lot of patience.
Well, if the story isn't intriguing enough for people, I encourage them to look up just some of these photos and get captured even more. So Chris and Katie, thank you so much for coming in and share your story.
Thank you so much. This is awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Katie and Chris Robleski are the Flash Knights. They joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio while they were back in Milwaukee before hitting the road once again. And that's today's edition of the show. I'm Joy Powers. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and please join us again tomorrow at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's 11 o'clock, and stay tuned. Fresh air is next.